Is the era of Tim Pawlenty over? Welcome to And For Other Things. I'm Andy Aplikowski. It's Monday, February 5th. It's a big week in Minnesota politics and for the Republican Party, at least, with precinct caucuses on Tuesday. Democrats hold caucus, but they do a primary anyways. On our side of the aisle, I think some of us are hoping to avoid a primary and actually win this statewide election. A lot is on the line with the straw poll at caucuses, especially for the GOP, with Tim Pawlenty running one of the least covert draft me movements in recent history. He dangled his name for the race against Amy Klobuchar for months, then declined. Then it was for the other special election due to Fraken's resignation for due to sexual misconduct, and he declined. Why did he decline both? Because he wasn't assured a win. Now, he's been allowed and rumored, been allowed to get his name in there and rumored to be considering running for governor for weeks, and it's causing paralysis and it's causing a distraction with the media because, quite frankly, I don't think the media, the left-leaning media at least, wants to have Tim or wants to have the Republicans solidify behind a candidate so early. With Jeff Johnson being kind of one of the last of that tier one candidates in the race, there's a good strong argument to be made. If he does well, if he gets over 50% in the straw poll, he's already leading in fundraising. He seems to have the better organization across the state. If he dominates in a straw poll, I think he's the presumptive candidate, and there's a strong argument to be made for others to clear the field so that we can get the RGA and the donors united behind him to actually start mounting that campaign against the Democrats. This would be the earliest we've probably ever done it, because even under Tim Pawlenty's terms, we had problems of having primary challenges. In 2006, he had a primary, and that was when the primary was in way back in September, right before the election. So I think it's very problematic that Tim Pawlenty is allowing this draft me movement to persist. And I frankly didn't believe it at first. And I still don't think it's as large as it is, but I think Tim Pawlenty's got a very good group of people that will get his name in the right places and make it seem like it's there. And here's the problem with Tim Pawlenty. It's always all about him. Don't forget, his wife did the same thing 2 years ago in the CD2 race. This was when John Klein was retiring, and there was kind of a little bit of a feeding frenzy of people wanting to run, and there was kind of a group of candidates, and everyone's like, oh, we just need someone better. We need someone better. Everyone was terrified of all the money that Angie Craig was going to bring into the race. And Mary Pawlenty, with Tim Pawlenty's same, you know, group of supporters, kind of kept this draft Mary movement out there, and she finally didn't do it. And you know, they ended up backing a different candidate in the primary that Jason Lewis, or not in the primary, for the endorsement that Jason Lewis had to beat. And, you know, unity was a little bit of a problem because they fought so hard for it, but Jason Lewis ended up winning. It's surprising them all. They all said he couldn't win, but he did, shockingly. So I worry about Tim Pawlenty doing this again, especially now, when it's not like we don't have credible candidates running, that if they did win the endorsement, that they wouldn't run a good campaign and be a good candidate. I mean, we don't have a field full of crazies anymore. So I think it's very, you know, if Tim Pawlenty wants to be some hero, he should go to these donors and say, no, so-and-so is good, or why don't you like him, and have a conversation and work behind the scenes to fix that. But instead, it's about him. So last Thursday, I went to the Liberty Tea Party Patriots meeting in Champlin. They had U.S. Senate candidates, Representative Jim Neuberger and Senator Karen Housley, in to speak before a governor's forum. And I wanted to see that governor's forum now that the field was down to four. Again, this was right before the Pawlenty news had just started to drip out there that he was thinking about it. I think it was that very day. But I wanted to hear this governor's race because I hadn't seen them go. It'd been a couple weeks since I'd seen the forum action, and that was with Dean still in the race. So I wanted to see how that dynamic changed. But unfortunately, I was trapped in the back of the room and caught up by conversations with several different people, and from activists all the way up to kind of more the behind-the-scenes movers and shakers. And a few of those conversations were mind-boggling. My jaw was on the floor. One person that's a respected pundit in circles and with the media suggested that Senator Fischbach is one of the only two options or small handful of options for the Republicans to pick as a lieutenant governor candidate. And I just was amazed, and I just said, excuse me, the same Senator Fischbach that we're trying so desperately to not lose her Senate seat to be a lieutenant governor for Governor Dayton. We're now saying we're going to instantly, in a couple months, slot her in as she's going to leave her Senate seat anyways. I mean, I don't see how some people don't see the whole entire battlefield or chessboard when we're talking politics in Minnesota. But hey, I don't have a job and they do. So another person I talked to, they were adamant, or they were convinced Tim Pawlenty was going to run. He's in. They just haven't announced it yet. So he's got some more work to do before they do the rollout. And I think it's probably going to happen. I mean, Tim Pawlenty did do the photo op door knocking with Denny McNamara over in the Senate District 54 seat. It's something only candidates do. If Tim Pawlenty was enjoying retirement from his bank lobbying, I don't think would have been out in the sub-zero temperatures this weekend knocking on doors. So I think he is running, or he wants to run. He's doing the things that a candidate would do at this point before he probably gets in the race. Maybe this is the final trial balloon. And hopefully he listens to this, because I don't think he should run. Another influential person I talked to at this meeting on Thursday night says that they were in D.C. recently, and the buzz that the RGA was willing to back Pawlenty over an endorse, or willing to back Pawlenty. And I said, even if they have someone else gets the endorsement, and the indication was yes. And again, jaw on the floor. I'm like, seriously, this does not make sense, because when I was running for deputy chair, and even before that, you know, even when I was on state executive committee following the 2014 election, in the autopsy that was kind of going on with internally and with the RGA or the national groups was, you know, we needed a little more time in Minnesota. We didn't quite have enough time because of the late primary we had that year. You know, Johnson won the endorsement and then had to fight off the primary. And then we didn't have time to pivot to the general election and the work that you have to do to build up not only the name ID to, you know, beat up your opponent, if you will, and really make sure that you can start changing those public opinion polls. And, you know, the trend we were on was about 2 months behind what some of the other states that pulled off wins that year were. And, you know, the RGA realized if we had picked a candidate and solidified earlier, you know, we might have made that thing happen. You know, because, again, there was an upward trend for Johnson that election. We just ran out of time. So now to hear that the RGA, again, this is all hearsay, if you will, because it's a small number of people saying this to me, but it bears out debunking the logic of these people. And I'm amazed again that these people are, well, I'm going to move on. I spoke to somebody else that had recently spoken with the RGA, and they said they don't believe this angle. In fact, the RGA national groups are cooling the idea of former governors or former elected officials returning from D.C. when these posh lobbying gigs or appointments to run for office again. Evan Bayh and Tommy Thompson were both supposed to ride in on these white horses for easy wins, and it didn't go so well. So you're seeing this case where the establishment tries to clear the field and insert some, I don't want to say has been, it's not the right word, but someone who used to be elected, and they think that they can just slide back in. And I think it's very important for us in Minnesota, Republicans, as we're once again dealing with the potential of someone trying to install our candidates for us, to remember what Tim Pawlenty was really, remember the era of Tim Pawlenty. Let's go back to the 2002 election. Bush's first midterm election, typically the Republicans don't do well in those elections. And it wasn't really going that great for Republicans. That was the year Senator Wellstone tragically died in the plane crash. And a few days later, on October 29th, they had the Wellstone Memorial that turned that election. I'm going to post a link. I'm going to post links as usual to all the things I'm referencing here. But I found the old video from C-SPAN of the actual raw footage of this event. And that was the one where it was supposed to be a nice bipartisan actual memorial, and it turned into a political rally. And you saw the people walking out. And that really did change the tide. And I think it really did change the trend in Minnesota. And I don't think it would have been as good of a year as we thought. The governor's race was 2002. Tim Pawlenty's first term, just coming off the Jesse Ventura thing. People were looking for grown-ups to run. But they were also looking for less of the political party stuff. And I think the Wellston Memorial was just the ultimate, ugh, I don't want to deal with that. And the results from that year, you know, Tim Pawlenty, yes, he won, but it was 44%. Roger Moe had 36%. And here's why I'm bringing this up. Tim Penny had 16%. Ken Pentel had 2%, over 2%. Pawlenty won by over 178,000 votes. I'm not going to take that away from him. But the left-leaning Independence Party candidate got 364,000 votes. That's huge. And that's what a lot of people forget about the Pawlenty era. And I think if you look to today, the left third party and the right third party, the left third party has diminished in meaning. And recently in the presidential race in Minnesota, left-wing third parties didn't get a huge amount of votes. Right-wing third parties did. I think Gary Johnson got over 120,000 votes or close to that. Donald Trump only lost by 45,000. So I think there's the left has learned from the past of we have to circle the wagons and get behind a candidate and vote for them. We on the right haven't done that. And I think if anything of all these people begging for someone like Tim Pawlenty, I say, suck it up, buttercup. It's time for you to get on the bus, not for us to get on the bus. And I think it's also really important in 2002, Tim Pawlenty underperformed Norm Coleman by 117,000 votes. Tim Pawlenty got like 999,000. Tim Pawlenty got 108, over 1 million votes. So there was a big difference there. Tim Pawlenty also even came in behind Mary Kiffmeyer. She got 40,000 more votes than Pawlenty for Secretary of State. Let's fast forward to the 2006 election. A bad year for Republicans nationwide. Again, I'm not going to try to say that Minnesota was an outlier in this. Just like nationally, we had a good wave in 2002, did pretty well. 2006 was bad for everyone. Now, in 2002, we escaped that normal presidential referendum, if you will. We were not as lucky in 2006, although things were going pretty well that year. We actually were. And then something happened. Congressman Foley's instant messaging with an underage congressional page. And that was it. The trend was there. I was a BPOU chair that year, and we had candidates. That was a kind of a more of a swing district in the Blaine area, and we had candidates out there working, and they had signs where they didn't ever have signs before. And they all of a sudden this happened, and now they're having to explain the Iraq war, and then the places they had signs, they're being asked to go back and pick them up and get them out of this. So it was a watershed. That was the peak, or the wave started to crash against us at that time. And again, it was a bad year. That was the year the Democrats took over Congress, Speaker Pelosi, and everything was kind of downhill from there for several years on us. But in that 2006 election, I think it's important to point out that the Real Clear Politics average polling also had Pawlenty losing big to Hatch. Now, again, if you remember, Pawlenty won. But if you look at the polling, and again, I'm posting the links to this on the website and forotherthings.com, so you can go and reference this yourself and take a look. That last month of the election, Tim Pawlenty was behind. And he ended up winning. And again, so there was somehow he managed to skip through the minefield that everyone else hit. Everyone else fell through because it was a bloodbath up and down the ballot for Republicans, especially in Minnesota that year. Most people forget this. It was in the last week of October 2006. Judy Dutcher, E85. She was being asked by a reporter for KSTP about E85, and she didn't know what it was, and she thought it was some quiz bowl trick question or something like that. E85 in Minnesota. Now, we've gone a decade since then, so maybe some of the people don't quite know what this is, but if you look on a gas pump, you should, if you've ever put gas in a car in Minnesota, you should know what E85 is. And a couple days later, Judy Dutcher was the lieutenant governor candidate. Mike Hatch was the governor candidate, both on the Democrat side. They were a ticket. A few days later, Mike Hatch called that KSTP reporter a Republican whore. And that was it. It was the final week of the election. The Democrats shot themselves in the foot yet again. And it was amazing because this was the year I wrote for the blog Kennedy versus the Machine. We were covering the U.S. Senate race, so 2006 election, there's always a lot of overlap, and you're on the campaign trail as you're out and about, you cross paths with the other candidates. We saw plenty a lot on there. In that final 5 days of the election, I was out on the statewide tour with Congressman Kennedy. This is right on the heels of the Dutcher E85 and Mike Hatch Republican whore comments. And as we're going around the state, especially in greater Minnesota, it was a big deal, and it changed things. I mean, we had people coming up and saying, you know, never been with Republicans before, but you know what this means, so I'm supporting you guys. Take what you like about E85 as conservatives set it apart, but in at least at that time, it was a big deal in politics, especially elections, to at least be supportive of the idea of it. So as far as trying to win in elections, you got to try to get people to vote for you. And that was one of the ways to do it. Democrats turned off what was a growing base for them in the farming community, and it helped him plenty. He squeaked by with another victory again. But again, aside from the Mike Hatch errors, the unforced errors that you cannot count on in an election. Key point, I want you to remember that. You cannot count on your opponents making colossal failures. In the 2006 election, Tim Pawlenty once again had help from a strong Independence Party performance on the left. Pawlenty had 46.7%. Mike Hatch had 45.7%. And Peter Hutchinson had 6.4%. So once again, you know, Tim Pawlenty squeaked out a 1% margin, but there was over 6%, another sizable chunk that could have gone to the Democrat that didn't. He won that race. He got more votes overall, but the margin was narrowed. The Democrats kind of came home. Pawlenty won with just 20,000 more votes. But again, the Independence Party got 141,000 votes. So I don't think you can... Tim Pawlenty never broke 50% when he ran for governor. So I think all these people thinking he's going to be this amazing candidate that's going to clear the field and the Democrats are going to bow down and get out of the way, and it didn't happen before. Why is it going to happen now? The rest of the statewide ticket in 2006 was obliterated. There was a bloodshed in legislative races too. The GOP election night party was more like a wake. And let's just say there was lots of tears and beers that night. Rumor has it that Pawlenty realized he dodged the bullet after that election, and going into the governing portion of working with the legislature now controlled by Democrats, who had a supermajority in the Senate and nearly a supermajority, just a few votes short in the House, he was barely a goalkeeper, more like a windsock. And I think if you just go through some of the, over the 8 years of Pawlenty, I mean, the gas tax, several members of the Republicans have told me that he walked into that caucus meeting and said, go ahead and vote your conscience on the veto override. And I still have the Taxpayers League poster of the override 8. He got overridden. A lot of people say he was not upset with that. He signed the Twin Stadium bill. Former legislators to say he started getting us in bidding wars with the Democrats to win over Education Minnesota. The spending increases. While some people say they were reductions in spending, spending still went up a lot under Tim Pawlenty. Let's not forget about the cigarette tax that Tim Pawlenty called the health impact fee, because he did sign a no new taxes pledge, but they really needed some money. So it was called the health impact fee, but it was really a tax on cigarettes. And it was in my mother's living room when Tim Pawlenty was running, I believe it was for re-election, said, go ahead and call it a tax if you want. Came out of his words. I saw him say that. In 2007, the state of the state, Tim Pawlenty embraced the global warming nuttery of cap and trade. And again, I'm linking to this. It was a New Republic thing. It was an interview with Tim Pawlenty, and they were talking to some other people, Again, this is sourced on the website andforotherthings.com, so go check it out. This was the far-reaching environmental agenda called Minnesota Drive to 20 or Drive for 25, like 20 for 25, something like that. I can't remember the name, but whereas we're going to get 25% of our electricity from renewable energy by 2025. Yeah, 25 for 25, something like that. And I remember at the time people were saying, you know, The environmentalists love it. Great, great, great. But on the other side, the policy side of this, the real world implication side of this is the only reason the major energy companies in Minnesota agreed to this is because they were able to increase their rates to make this happen. The investment to go renewable was so expensive it didn't make sense. And the only way these energy companies would do this is if they could raise the rates. Once again, it's more expensive. It doesn't make sense. Also, in this article, Roger Moe, who was Pawlenty's 2002 opponent, and Larry Jacobs are both quoted in this. And this is Larry Jacobs. Pawlenty has always been the establishment in Minnesota, and Bachman has always been the renegade, says University of Minnesota political scientist Larry Jacobs. Pawlenty thought she was kind of a crackpot. He would roll his eyes when her name came up. Roger Moe said the former longtime majority leader of who was the former majority leader in the state Senate and that 2002 opponent to Pawlenty describes his rival as the kind of guy you can have a beer with, despite their political differences. But Moe cannot resist chuckling. I can just tell you, I know for sure on the inside of him that Pawlenty is just seething over Bachman. I bet they have to lock him in a room when he reads about her. Now, this was going into the 2012 election cycle, or maybe even just coming out of it. I don't remember exactly. But this is a pretty long article that I found, and it's got a lot of very telling things. I mean, I think love or hate Michelle Bachmann, she's pretty well liked in the Republican Party. And for Tim Pawlenty to apparently rumored, there's quoted individuals here saying he doesn't like her, I think it's important. I think the other thing, and getting back to the environmental thing, Governor Greengenes is what a lot of us used to call him when he was governor with Pawlenty. His pastor, Leith Anderson of Wooddale, was named to Obama's Advisory Council on Faith-Based Initiatives. So, I think it's a read the story again. It's the New Republic story. It's linked on the website. Check it out. I think these disliking of Bachman, that's a tough thing. It's that divisive nature of the establishment doesn't like activists and doesn't like conservatives. And we saw, and I think obviously it probably stems back a little bit to, or was re aggravated a little bit by the 2008 election cycle. That was the year Tim Pawlenty, everyone thought he was going to be John McCain's VP pick. He campaigned very hard, both in Minnesota and across the country, for McCain. I think, if I remember, he even did the campaign change from blue to red that year to match up with McCain. And I remember I was at the rally in Blaine when McCain was in town once, and everyone kind of thought that was they were going to announce it then, but they didn't. So dragged on, dragged on, dragged on, and it ended up Tim Pawlenty didn't become John McCain's vice presidential pick. It was Sarah Palin. Kind of a Bachman clone at the time, the relatively unknown governor from Alaska. And I found another article from the Business Journal of the Twin Cities here, also linked to on the website. And it goes into how it didn't seem like he didn't take it very well. And I remember the time, it was very awkward. Again, we all thought it was just assumed he was going to be the guy. And then all of a sudden, it didn't happen. And Tim Pawlenty kind of went and did this. It was during the state fair here in Minnesota, instead of going to Ohio, where I think they rolled out the announcement of Palin, Tim Pawlenty went to didn't go, made some somewhat bitter sounding comments to the thing, and said, "I'm going to be at the state fair doing my radio show." So, I think there's that discontent there. Didn't go again. He didn't get what he wanted, and it didn't go well. It didn't sit well with him. So then, fast forward a little bit to 2009, after the Obama won, relatively early in that 2010 election cycle, which would have been the governor's re-election cycle, Pawlenty announced that he was not going to seek another term, and a lot of people thought, okay, he's going to run for president, and well, he did. In the 2011 straw poll, Pawlenty came in third, not bad, behind Michelle Bachmann and Ron Paul. So some people, the establishment would say, he's the top leading credible candidate. Some would say that. But his campaign didn't survive long enough to make it to the Iowa caucuses. And I think that's one of the things that people need to remember. Tim Pawlenty got lucky the two times he was elected governor. Other things had to happen. You had to have a credible third party challenge from the left. You had to have some event that was the final straw for those undecideds and that wave crashing right before the polls. Again, you can't predict those things. So for all these people that think Tim Pawlenty's going to ride in here and he's going to be a great candidate, we're going to win no matter what, can you tell me what the Democrat colossal failure is going to be in October of this year that's going to change the polls? Because I'm sorry. It's not meant to be personal. It's meant to be about we got to win this thing. And quite frankly, as I said before, if Tim Pawlenty has a bunch of people talking to him saying, boy, I wish you were running. I wish you were running. Ask them why. And honestly say, well, you can win. Well, you know, you got lucky both times before this. And you didn't make it for president. You didn't make it for vice president. So, and it sucks because I've been there. Trust me. I think everyone knows I've had some pretty public losses. And it's not fun. And you think you're the best person. And you even in loss, you think, man, if they would have only picked me, or I'd be doing... I think Tim Pawlenty is doing a huge disservice to the Republicans in Minnesota and the desperate battle we are in of stopping the left from controlling the governor's mansion again and expanding on the just devastating policies of Governor Dayton and going into the redistrict. The next governor will be governor during the redistricting process. And I think if the Democrats hold this, it's going to be ugly, especially with the notion of losing a congressional district. I mean, Democrats could probably come up with a scenario where there's almost no way a Republican can win, or they might cede one or two, but they're going to maintain that. And then the legislative redistricting, it's Met Council, the trains, the healthcare. If you go through Tim Pawlenty's policies as a Republican, they shouldn't make you happy. As a business owner, they should not necessarily make you happy. So I don't understand this love affair with Tim Pawlenty. Seems like a nice individual. I don't like the way his staff and his supporters play in the trenches. They're not friendly to people. They look at more, it's more important to clear the field than to win over hearts and minds. And that's troublesome. And I pray he doesn't run for several reasons. One, he's got the ability right now to look at his life and go, well, I got some good things done and I'm leaving on my own terms. You don't leave on your own terms when you lose. And I don't know how this ends up with him if he doesn't win the endorsement, him winning. And even if he can manage to buy the primary with this alleged donor money that's hanging out there over everyone's head, it's still Minnesota. And if you have a divided Republican Party because the activists just got squashed by the establishment, I got news for you. That general election's going to be really, really expensive. And the Republicans that just got stepped on are going to look for someplace else to vote. As I said, the Democrats have learned how to unify behind their candidates. Third-party protest votes are very small and diminished. On the Republican side, it's not. We just saw that. Now, we might have learned a little bit of a lesson, but the proof will be in the results, not in the theory. So it's important for Tim Pawlenty to understand you've got an out right now of saying, you know what, I spent a couple weeks talking to voters and activists and Republicans across the state and, you know, talking to the other candidates, and candidate so-and-so who's already running is a great person and I'm endorsing them. You want to be a hero, Tim Pawlenty? Endorse someone. Pick someone. Go talk to someone. Go meet with the other candidates. Help them out. Come in as their campaign chair. But don't ride in here like this white knight. Half the activists and delegates of the Republican Party don't know who you are. There's a lot of new people around. And I think it's selfish for you, any candidate, to think, oh, the world can't survive without me. And if you don't get to be the candidate, you don't get picked, that you just sit on your ball, take your ball and go home, and you tell donors not to give, or you hope that the Republican Party fails. I mean, there's people out there right now trying to undermine the Senate majority. We have this barely majority that could Any day, something could happen, a car accident, anything, and the Democrats could take over control. There's people rooting for that because they're upset that they've been spited for something that they did in the past. They've been held accountable for their actions, and it upsets them. One of the people that I was at the that I was talking to at that Tea Party event in the back of the room, again, I really wanted to see the governors. I didn't even hear one of the questions, I don't think, because I was just bouncing around from conversation to conversation. There is one person that says, "Man, I loved your blog. I wish you'd start writing again." Talking with him for a while, and he says, "You know, one of the reasons you can't win anything is your blog." I'm just like, "You hypocrite." And it's Tim Pawlenty, please don't run. Please, please don't run. As I said, be a real leader and help someone else. Again, I don't think you can win. I don't. You're a historical figure now. You're not in the conscience of the public. You're not even in the conscience of the Republican Party. So I think if you really want to help us out, as I said, get involved, get to know the candidates and endorse one. Help them. Become their campaign chair. Help the Republican Party raise money. You don't have to help an individual candidate. But go around and talk about how the Republican Party can please these people. I mean, let's not forget, in 2010, the reason Tom Emmer lost was all the Republicans that went and voted for Tom Horner. Why? Because there was a bunch of Republicans that didn't like Tom Emmer for something that ended up not being true. They all love him now. So I think, I really hope you're not going to do this. I really hope you don't understand, you don't truly think that the Republican Party is your personal playground. And you love us when you need us, but when you don't need us, quite frankly, you work with the Democrats. On policy, I didn't like you. Again, it has nothing to do with you as a person. And I just don't think you can win. And I think a lot of other people are in that same boat. I mean, if you're going to take... the campaign spending limit or contribution limit in Minnesota is $4,000. Do you know 1,000 people that are going to, or yes, I think it's 1,000 people that are going to write you a $4,000 check? I don't think so. So you're still going to need some of them smaller guys that are still going to pony in. And so this love affair of we've got to please the donors. Look at the 2016 presidential election. There were 17 candidates all trying to please the donors for the most part. Maybe 14 of them were trying to please the donors. Some of them were truly running on something. And one candidate shocked them all. What was more shocking is the choice of the of that establishment, that money, those donors, those rich guys, and those professional politicians. It was Jeb Bush. And it was not good. I mean, it was embarrassing. He's not a good candidate. I mean, the please clap moment. And, it's just these people who've been unplugged from being in the trenches, while they still get the media and the news sit-ins, punditry, it's not the heart and pulse of the people out there. I mean, even the Chamber of Commerce circus is not telling you what's really going on out there. And I think the foundational groundwork in how Republican politics work in Minnesota has changed. And we're not necessarily someone that says, okay, tell me who I'm going to vote for. That person needs to convince us. And I don't see how Tim Pawlenty coming in from on high and just pushing these candidates who've been working at this for years out of the way, it's going to sit well. At best, there's no endorsement and there's a primary. Which means we're starting in April or in August against the Democrats. It's not doable. It's against all logic. And it just doesn't make sense. It's not how you win an election. You've got Democrats outraising Republicans. And guess what? If Tim Walz, something happens and he runs out of money and doesn't win the primary, whoever else, all those people are still going to give money. That doesn't happen on our side. And it's important for the people that talk to those people that could do that to not pander to them and say, yeah, I agree with you. Those conservatives are crazy. We can't have them. You're not doing any favors for anybody. So we have precinct caucuses coming up tomorrow night. I encourage everyone to go. I encourage everyone. As far as I know, Tim Pawlenty's name will not be on the straw poll. I believe you had to file for governor and declare that you're running for that to happen at this late date, the day before. I just don't know if it's going to be possible. I think also, regardless of whether he's at the straw poll, I think it's going to be impossible for Tim Pawlenty just to get letters and volunteers across the state organized to have a presence at caucus. So it's just the ability to run a campaign that's going to be credible the time has already started. And that's where, to me, there's not, Tim Pawlenty's got a plan and he's been shown data and events or mistakes made by the other candidates that lead him to believe, yes, he can do better. He's got people telling him he should run without a plan. Without a path to victory. In fact, there is no path to victory for the endorsement at this point. Because again, you've got, Jeff Johnson is as far as I'm concerned, I think he's pretty clearly the front runner. And as I said, if he wins the straw poll with over 50%, he's a presumptive candidate. So we don't need to necessarily have this ugly trench war, which has been happening, of him getting attacked by other candidates and this and that. We need to, as much as I love the endorsement, if you have one credible candidate and one not so credible candidate, I think it's time for us to try to coalesce as much as possible and for those other candidates to fall on their sword and support the ability to win. Because again, and this is the intention of this long rambling dissertation here. We're over 30 minutes. In order for Republicans to win the governor's race in 2018 here, Republicans need to unite behind a candidate as early as possible and get assistance from the national groups. And a lot of what that assistance is donations. There's a significant amount of money from certain people within Minnesota, but the thing that's going to put us over the top is donations from other states and out of Minnesota. That's where, because again, there's not 1,000 people that can write a $4,000 check to max out to the governor candidate on our side. It doesn't happen. So I think you're going to, you need to get an early coalescence to get a candidate that this is our candidate and we're going to get them early, get them in preferably in the summer, if not earlier, so that they can spend some time fundraising while the Democrats are beating each other up in a primary. And we can coalesce behind, this is what our message is going to look like as Republicans. And we can start to identify the difference or identify the Democrats' difference with us so that voters understand what the choices are. And the earlier we can do that, the better. And that's where I'm just, again, the only scenario where Pawlenty pulls this off is in a primary. And it's going to be too late. And for all of you that love him, do you love him more than you would love to have anyone besides a Democrat as governor? Because that's where this ends. I just don't see a path to victory for him. I'm sorry to say, I believe the era of Tim Pawlenty is over. And I hope other people realize that too, so we can move past it and focus on who can possibly win this 2018 election with so much at stake. Again, I think the era of Tim Pawlenty is over. He was once quoted and quickly snapped it back that the era of small government was over. If you need to know why, I just really don't want Tim Pawlenty to run. There you go. But again, thank you for listening to And For Other Things. I'm Andy Aplikowski. You'll be able to find all the information referenced during this show at andforotherthings.com. If you're sharing this with someone, please subscribe via iTunes. Let me know if you have any other requests for other podcasting things out there. And stay tuned. I should be showing up on the Podbabble Network soon. Again, Andy Aplikowski, sorry this has been so long today. Go to precinct caucuses tomorrow night and let your voices be heard. Thank you.